That's right. We're feeling twangy here in the Rebel Room. This is Taylor Byrne alongside Case Kiefer, missing our third man, Ray Brewer, out this week with, what should we call it, laryngitis, illness of some repute that he most likely picked up from his child because he's an important person with a family.
He's day to day.
We hope to have him back soon. You're stuck with us, too, and guess what we're talking about? Another UNLV loss, unfortunately, for them. You know, anyone who was out there at the stadium, probably not listening because the crossover can't be really that much. The announced crowd, about 14-3, I believe, you know, announced is generally trumped up at least a little bit, and it looked just as empty as that sounds for a Rebel game that turned out to be at least a little entertaining. Came back from 23 down in the third quarter. Really solid, you know, kind of turnaround after looking like they just couldn't do anything in the first half, only had 5 points at halftime. So to that point, through 10 quarters of the season, they'd only scored 2 touchdowns. They scored 3 in the third quarter alone, came back, tied it, gave up a score right away. And then just as they were inside the 10, looking like they were going to be able to tie it again, tip ball interception, and then NIU goes down for another touchdown that puts things away. But after, you know, after a brutal start, brutal first half, things get better. Blake Decker finishes with 397 passing yards. That was the 13th most in school history, most since 1997, I believe. They UNLV recorded their first safety since, I think, 2003,
which is
a crazy stat to me. But Case, just kind of outside perception, you know, NIU had the win against Northwestern on its resume. Northwestern might be the worst team in the Big Ten. This is the 26th straight regular season victory for the Huskies. You know, are you looking at home loss for UNLV? You know, just kind of ho-hum, this is going to be another bad year? Or do you kind of take away that third quarter and, you know, think that maybe they've figured a couple things out?
Yeah, well, for someone that obviously wasn't at the game and I didn't even get to see any of it, I was following as closely as I could and looking at the box score. And this is going to sound ridiculous, losing by 14 points at home, but I think this is probably the most positive I've been after a UNLV game this year. I mean, like I said, I wasn't at the game, but statistically, this has to be the best they've played all year.
Oh, definitely.
It would seem. I mean,
yeah.
So if you go back to the old coaches cliche, which I absolutely hate, but that you need to get better every week, I think there's an argument that could be made that the Rebels have been doing that. I mean, some of the questions I think we talked about last week on the podcast, like where's Shaq Murray Lawrence? I guess we kind of got that answer. He got a lot more carries.
Well, and yet, just a quick side note on that, neither he or Bobby have gone into any details, and I don't think they will. I think it's just something, you know, I've speculated that it was they didn't think that Murray Lawrence – like came into training camp in particularly good shape from the offseason. There could be something with that. But Shaq, after the game, did say that it was basically the plan all along that he was going to sit out the first two games and then come back for the third. So essentially a two-game suspension for him. He was solid, 2 touchdowns, career high, 17 carries, 60 yards, also caught a couple of passes. So, yeah, he was good.
Yeah, so that was good to see. And, I mean, the other things we talked about was Devontae Davis. They don't get him the ball enough. Well, he had 150 yards and 2 touchdowns. And Decker, I mean, it might have been because they fell in that huge hole and they had to throw a lot, but he put up a pretty decent numbers too. So, I mean, statistically, I do think it was their best game, and I wasn't – I mean, I guess the answer was I wasn't thinking ho-hum, another home loss. I was thinking, all right, well, maybe they're getting a little bit better going into Mountain West play here pretty soon and can steal a couple.
Yeah, I mean, the counter to that is that the defense, again, is what dug the hole, because last week when you looked at the Northern Colorado game, offense was moving the ball, but just turnovers. You know, 4 interceptions killed a lot of those drives. They didn't have that problem in the first half. They weren't turning the ball over. They just weren't executing. A couple of times there were catches made, but one, you know, foot was out of bounds. They were so close. There was actually on, I think it was the opening drive, Devontae Davis caught it in the end zone. They ruled him out of bounds, and all indications are that if they had actually looked at replay, or if they had good replay of it, talking to people who were right down by that play, he was in. And so UNLV could have had a touchdown there early, which, you know, obviously would have changed kind of the way that the game plays out. But as it is, looked like Blake Decker, the UNLV offense, just went with basically the offensive philosophy that I hear from anyone who ever has opinions on such things on Twitter, which is just throw it to Davis. And that was all they were doing early on, they were force-feeding him the ball. Like I said, a couple of times he made really nice catches but was just barely out of bounds. Still had a great one-handed catch for the two-point conversion later in the game and had another couple of just really impressive ones. This was his ninth career 100-yard receiving game. A couple of touchdowns. This is the type of performance that we saw a lot last year. Definitely more what we've been accustomed to than the, you know, two catches for 18 yards last week. So I thought that was a really smart plan. I don't know how smart it is. Just throw it to your best player. Like it's not so much that they were geniuses for thinking of that. It was just that good. You did what everyone thought you should have done, because guess what? Most of these guys can't cover, especially when Northern Illinois was going to some of their one-on-one coverages, which is what UNLV saw a lot more in the third quarter. One-on-one, people can't cover Devontae Davis. You just can't. And you at least have to force them to make a play by throwing the ball to that side. And so that was good. Shaq Murray-Lawrence got the start, is back. Marcus Sullivan, who was listed as doubtful, he was dressed and was a game-time decision, but he did not play. And Keith Whiteley was actually decent returning. Logan Yunker, the punter, really solid game for him.
He's a pretty good punter in general.
He is.
It reminds me of we both went to Kansas. When I first got to Kansas, they were actually great at the end of when I went to Kansas. When I first got there was when they were still pretty bad, and the best person on their team was the punter.
Yeah.
He's really good every year.
That's never a good sign.
It's kind of like Logan Yunker's giving me some flashbacks.
Yeah, I think he averaged 48 yards per kick over four punts the other day. Nikolai Bornand, I like the guy. I think he should be the full-time field goal kicker, which could happen since Jonathan Levy missed a short one the other day. But he's got to stop kicking the ball out of bounds. This is the second time this year. He did it three times last year in nine appearances. They were flirting with it the entire time. I don't put it on him so much as, and I guess Bobby Houck as the special teams coordinator. They were doing those kind of directional kicks for the entire game. And then he does it right after they tie the game, and it sets up Northern Illinois with tremendous field position, and less than a minute later, they score and take the lead again. Like, those are the type of things, just, you know, they come back all the way, but then Rebs will still Reb, and kicking the ball out of bounds is very much kind of their MO.
Yes, very.
And another kind of MO problem for them, and this is something that I was going through the numbers earlier this morning, they gave up a touchdown in the last 30 seconds of the first half, and then gave up a score on Northern Illinois' first drive of the second half. But that last minute of the first half has plagued UNLV completely. Over the past couple of years, last 15 games, so all of 2013 and these first three games, 2014, they have given up a score in the last minute of the first half seven times.
That's bad. That seems very high.
I don't have, you know, numbers to say, you know, what like a national average is, what other teams in the conference give up. I just don't have time to go through all of that. That does not seem good. Nearly half the time. And it hasn't, you know, the other thing, it hasn't killed them. In those games, they're 3-4. And so sometimes they can be just the fluke scores. But I know a score before halftime, it just changes things. It changes momentum. It gives a different feeling to the game in a lot of situations. One of those examples, the one time that UNLV was actually able to do it, if you say just in the last minute over that same stretch, UNLV has only been the one to score in the final minute once, but extend it to a minute 10, and they've done it three times. One of those, the only one in the final minute, was against Central Michigan, and that was the game that kind of changed everything. That was the score that kind of pivoted things when Caleb Herron came in and had that big pass to Devontae Davis and sort of turned that season around. This time, another comeback attempt. If they had been able to finish it, it would have been the largest comeback in school history, 23 points, actually beating that Central Michigan game when they were down 21-0. But you're right, and I don't feel terrible about the Rebels right now, especially after another weekend where the Mountain West just looks bad, man. Like, just bad. Bad. I mean, I figured Nebraska was going to go just knock Fresno State around. They did.
Me too, but not 55-17.
Yeah.
I picked Nebraska, but God, that was pretty crazy. I think the only bright spot right now is Reno. not yeah, looking they, good. I mean, they get him at home, but not looking good for keeping the cannons. I think Reno's looked really good these last couple weeks.
Were you able to see much of that? You were probably.
No, I've seen,
yeah,
I've seen none, but just
Case limping around
wise.
Today after a weekend at Riot Fest in Chicago. Is that
correct.
Where that's at?
Okay. Yeah.
And so missed an entire football weekend, which has got to be tough for you.
Yeah, that was insane. That was pretty crazy, but tried to keep up to date as good as I could.
Reno ended up losing by 7 to Arizona. They have had a lot of bright spots. That's a team I'd say it's surprising just because I didn't buy a lot of the Reno hype, but there were a lot of, you know, writers, people around the league preseason who, and they even got a first place vote in their division, and a lot of people who just expected them to be really good. And I think the main reason is just because Cody Fajardo was back.
Yeah, I think I just forgot, but I was going back when I was writing my college football betting preview that I do every week to the Mountain West preview, and I was actually pretty high on UNR going into the season. And now I think I've forgotten that, because the last 2 weeks I think I picked them to not cover against Washington State or Arizona, and they beat Washington State and covered easily against Arizona. So wish I would have stuck to my guns on that one a little bit.
Another week of Mountain West picks for me, where I pick every game that's going on. I was 8-1 last week. 5-3 this past week. One of the loss that stings the most, 27-24 Hawaii victory over Northern Iowa. That's a bummer. But I will say, credit a lot
you
of
got that one right or wrong?
No, I got that one wrong.
You picked Hawaii?
No, I picked you and I.
Oh, okay. What was the line?
It got down to 2.
Oh, okay. I was about to say, because I was, when I looked, it was way early last week, and I was looking at the line, but it was like 5, right? Early.
Well,
in the week?
I think that was before. Because it was off the board or off anything.
Okay.
I couldn't find it when I published
probably
that.
Offshore when
but
I
it was
it.
Well, I was looking at offshore, okay. But Hawaii had injuries that they then announced their best lineman and their running back were going to be out of the game. And so I think that took it off the board for a while. But, yeah, it got down to 2. You and I just screwed up in the first half, and then we're kind of chasing the dragon the whole way. Couldn't do it.
You had that one coming to you, though, because 1 week we were talking about our picks. And I had what I thought was a pretty heartbreaking loss to keep me from going, I think, 7-3 that week when I had Oregon State over Hawaii. And you were on the opposite side of that. You picked Hawaii.
Well,
when
but you didn't actually care about the outcome of that one.
Well,
it was like
we both had picks.
Yeah,
I mean,
but
it was in my picks, too.
I don't care that I lost it because it's a pick. I care that I lost it because it's you and I.
Okay, I got you. Yeah. I'm just saying I feel like you might have had one coming for you there with the Rainbow Warriors. And
I've had a few
Rainbow
coming.
Anymore.
That 8-1 week was blessed by a lot of good luck. And I think that went away a little bit here this past week with Boise State. I think I missed that one by a point as they ended up winning at UConn by 17.
That was Ray Brewer's worst beat of the week, too. He told me earlier.
I think I had it at 16. But, yeah, the league looks so bad that once UNLV gets into play, you know, it's about a month before they return home for homecoming, and that's Fresno State. Fresno looks awful. They go this week for their last non-con game. Well, not last of this stretch before they do have BYU waiting in November. But go to Houston. That's going to be a tough one. And then at San Diego State, which I think they're probably not going to win. And San Jose State seems very winnable. But, you know, by that stretch, you know, it's just going to be about how's the health, how's kind of, I guess, everything going by that point. Because you'll have this loss coming into Houston, I think that's probably going to be a loss. And then, you know, San Diego State could be a three game losing streak heading into the San Jose State game. So that'll be something to monitor there. But for this week, there are some positives to build on offensively, but I just don't, man, this defense. It's like the same conversation every year. And so I don't want to hammer it too much, but what do you think is the biggest issue here? Is it execution? You know, you could excuse, at least, you know, you can make the argument against Arizona. All right, they were in the right place, just missing tackles, played pretty well against Northern Colorado. And now Northern Illinois giving up 15 of 19 third down conversions. All right, you played great on or well enough on first and second, but to just not be able to get yourself off the field, at a certain point, it's inexcusable. If you want to win, it's inexcusable.
Do they have anyone that can cover anyone? That's my question. I mean, that seems like the problem going back a long way. I mean, that's what stands out in my mind when you say all these teams scored in the final minute too. It's because teams are running the hurry up and just chucking the ball downfield. And it seems like UNLV is just inept in the secondary. Maybe it's true for another year. I mean, Drew Hare, Northern Illinois quarterback, didn't put up like ridiculous numbers, but still, I mean, they didn't have to throw that much because they went up big. He's still 18 for 28, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, 285 yards. I mean, I know this is probably an easy answer, but God, that's got to be my biggest concern, is just how are they going to stop teams from throwing all over them?
And he also ran a bit, and that's what Bobby was talking about regarding
74 yards rushing.
Yeah, regarding the third down problem on defense, was that he said Northern Illinois has a tendency, you know, third and eight, they're not afraid to run it and kind of things like that. And so they didn't want to call very many blitzes in those situations. And so then it was, and a lot of the third down conversions was Hare scrambling. Was just finding the gaps and being able to convert. And so, you know, whether that means you need to spy him with a quarterback with a linebacker, or you just need to, you know, blitz more and just take your chances with that run, because you know that, you know, doing it this way is just getting you beat up. You know, that was their biggest problem. That was what dug them into that hole that the offense then was able to dig out of, sort of, and then it all came unraveling again. But yeah, some positives to take, especially after the Northern Colorado game. I think most people weren't really expecting any victory here. It was more, can you keep it close? And eventually they did with that. But I don't know, not a lot of optimism, I would say, probably heading into Houston.
No, and I know as a freshman last year, Houston's quarterback, John O'Korn, was pretty good. And I'd just be worried about him throwing all over UNLV too. But Houston played really well last week, so I can't possibly pick UNLV to win either of these next two games. And no. I think right now that San Jose State game that you mentioned earlier, to me, just really looms large. I think if there is like a pivot point of this year, like we talked about last year with Central Michigan, I think it might have to come there. Because UNLV might be better than San Jose State, but being on the road, that's probably going to be a close game. Maybe you win there and build some confidence and can finish okay in the Mountain West.
Yeah, because this was your chance to kind of get one of those victories that you really need to kind of finish around the 6 or 7 win mark. And you know, you end up losing by 14. Next 2 weeks don't look good. You're probably going to be 1-4. So that is potentially a huge game there. We'll get more into that as we get closer to it. But to finish up this Rebel Room, Case Kiefer, who is wearing a Miami Heat polo.
Oh, I'm so pumped about this. I totally forgot until right now.
Tell me about the new guy that they just signed.
Well, if you remember back, I think it was like the day after the draft, I told you that I need, or it might have been the night of the draft, I said I really need to get Pat Riley's phone number and get a call into him because the Heat need to sign Kim Birch. It's ridiculous. It's an atrocity that this guy didn't go drafted. He's better than half of the draft so far. Personally, I think my very professional scouting. I had him like a late first round pick. The guy goes undrafted. I think he played for the Wizards in the summer league, signed with Washington, but now going to training camp with the Miami Heat, signed to the team, one of 19 guys. I couldn't be happier because I really, really like Kim Birch. I think that he kind of fits in the role with the Heat, potentially kind of like how Joel Anthony did, another UNLV guy. I think he's going to be good defensively as a shot blocker and even a rebounder. I think he's good on the defensive end, good enough to play on the NBA in a reserve role right away. So I was really fired up at the Heat, who I've been a lifelong fan of, not just the last few years. I was excited when they signed Kim Birch yesterday or whenever.
Yeah, it was Sunday. It was announced a couple of weeks ago that he intended to play for the Miami Heat, but the contract terms undisclosed was signed over the weekend. He's one of 17 players currently under contract. They expect at least 19 in training camp. And, you know, you and I were just talking before starting the show here. There's 15 roster spots, basically 13 active and 2 inactive. And so, you know, being one of 17 guys under contract, there's an okay chance that you could be, you know, one of those 15 guys. And then another possible route, if that doesn't happen, I think is playing for the Sioux Falls Sky Force, which is the Heat's D-League affiliate.
Yeah, and they haven't been shy about doing that. They've done that with some players. Really what it looks like from looking at a little bit, we were talking about before the podcast, I mean, the Heat have basically 4 guys that are going to be big men on their roster no matter what, with Birdman, Udonis Haslam, Chris Bosh, and now someone stupid I'm blanking on. Really, he's going to have to beat out Justin Hamilton and Sean Williams, who probably have more experience than him. But if he beats both of them out, I mean, he could even make the he could potentially make the roster, probably a little bit better of a chance that he goes to the D League but stays on contract with the Heat. But I think it's pretty exciting, and I think he does have at least a chance to make this team right away.
Yeah, I'm happy for Birch, the guy I've always enjoyed talking to. I did not, you know, ultimately agree or think it was the best decision to leave early, but you know, I'm happy that at least at this point it seems like it may work out initially in his first year here.
How could I forget the other guy's Josh McRoberts, of course.
Oh, God.
Sorry to interrupt you, but yeah, that's how good. I just can't believe I forgot about him.
All right, so what color Heat jersey will you get of Birch?
I've been wanting, like, they wear those, like, throwback black ones a lot now. I've been wanting that. Maybe.
Do you have a throwback red one?
No, I have a throwback, like, white one, I think.
Yeah, that's the only one I've seen. Yeah. How many Heat jerseys do you have?
Like, 7 or something ridiculous like that.
I don't know. A Birch one is something I would even consider getting, so maybe you can put that on my wish list. We'll exchange Christmas presents, and we'll just get Kemp Birch jerseys for each other.
Different styles, though. Yes, can't exactly. Do the same one.
Of course.
I'm calling the black 90s throwback.
All right, that's fair. You got the black throwback. We'll figure out something else for me. Hopefully, Birch is able to make the roster there, and we'll obviously have updates here and on LasVegasSun.com as that story unfolds as well. For Case Kiefer, I am Taylor Byrne, heading to Houston this week to see if the Rebels can even their record. Neither of us expect it, but you know, we'll see what they have in store against the Cougars. All right, we will talk to you next week. And I'm hoping for Riley, I can see my baby tonight.